Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to Requirements.net's podcast, Requirements Unplugged. This is episode 8. This is Matt Morgan here, and joining me is Keith Barrett.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
I'm doing just great this morning.
Good, man. What are we talking about today?
So, two things. We're going to talk about a little bit of an update on the Carrie Schwaber events, the Requirements.net event with her coming up in April. And then we're going to get into our interview with our guest, Ellen Gottesdiener. We'll talk a little bit about the content of that interview. Yeah, so talk to me some about an update on the registrations for Carrie Schwaber.
Well, Keith, I'm glad you asked about this. This is pretty exciting for us, a new, relatively new consortium on the market out there talking to people, talking to folks. We've been operating for a little over 2 months now. And this particular event, I don't know if it's Carrie Schwaber or the popularity of Requirements.net or our partner RQNG, but we're really pleased to announce over 240 registrations as of this recording. And I'm looking at my watch here, and we're still 2.5 weeks out before this thing kicks off. So we're very hopeful that this webinar will have north of 500 registrations, possibly north of 6.
Well, that's a pretty unheard of number for most webinar-based sessions.
Yeah, we're very excited, and we've already gotten a copy of her presentation. And let me tell you, it's certainly something to pay attention to. She's got a lot of interesting thoughts and statistics she's going to be sharing. Registration, for those listening, registration can be done online. You go to requirements.net. On the left-hand side, you'll see the events section. Just simply click on the quality requirements equals quality software webinar, and you can register through us. You can also register directly through the requirements networking group at requirementsnetwork.com.
Excellent.
So what's next?
Well, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about our interview with Ellen. We've been trying our best here on Requirements Unplugged to bring into the conversation some of the industry's leading experts around the topic of the business analyst and software requirements and agile methodologies. And, we've talked with Alistair Coburn, and we had the conversation with the folks at Version 1 who are, agile project management leaders. And this time we get on the phone with Ellen Gottesdiener and with EBG Consulting. And she authored a couple of books, Requirements by Collaboration and the Software Requirements Memory Jogger. And we spend most of our time talking about Requirements by Collaboration. I think we're continuing to see in this interview, much like we've seen in the prior two or three, this very strong reoccurring theme that the role of the business analyst is becoming a crucial part of the success of a software development project. The ability for the business analyst to be a great facilitator, to understand the many diverse models, to understand the methodologies that are involved, are just some of the things that the business analyst has to be skilled at nowadays. So in our conversation with Ellen, she digs into this topic of collaboration and the idea of using workshops, and we also touch on the agile theme, and we talk a little bit about how the IIBA plays into all this and her role with the IIBA. So I think that's plenty of intro. One thing worthy to note, we're going to split this interview, much like we did the Alistair Coburn interview, into two parts. The total conversation was right at 40 minutes. So we're going to split this into two parts, and the first part will be focused on the collaboration. The second part will be focused more on her book of the Software Requirements Memory Jogger. Okay, enough intro. Let's get into the interview.
Sounds good, Keith. 2-1. Well, I think it's time that we go ahead and get to our interview. Today we have Ellen Gottesdiener on the call with us. Ellen has authored a couple of books, Requirements by Collaboration and the Software Requirements Memory Jogger. It's a great pleasure to have her on the show. We're going to talk largely about Requirements by Collaboration and this whole idea of how collaboration is more and more crucial to effective requirements development. So with that, Ellen, let me just ask the question, what really got you interested, or what made you decide to write Requirements by Collaboration?
Well, thanks, Keith, for having me on the show in Requirements.net, and thanks for your questions about collaboration. And I guess there's a couple of answers to that. One is that I found more and more that I was doing a lot of workshops with business and technical people, and a couple of things occurred to me. It really became clear that there were some patterns that I kept finding as a facilitator, guiding and designing the process, and then the actual workshops. I kept finding these same patterns over and over again, regardless of what the domain was that we were trying to collaborate on, and regardless of who the specific customers and IT people were, or whether we were doing custom development or COTS, commercial off-the-shelf software, packages or major enhancements. There just kept being these same patterns that occurred with how the requirements would come to fruition. And personally, I found the role of facilitating these workshops to be really very gratifying, because what people might initially think were, this is going to be really hard to figure out what we're going to do, not that it isn't, but, and we don't have a common understanding, a common language, as they started to really collaborate around the requirements, relationships started to change, decisions started to be able to be made, and projects would, really get a big jump start. And another thing that happened was sponsors and executive managers were amazed at how much their people could do in such a short period of time.
So,
And I thought, this story really needs to be told and shared with the community at large. So
out of your own personal experience and years of helping companies author and define the requirements, you started to recognize this pattern of how collaboration was a key contributor to effectively authoring and defining those requirements and helping nurture the relationships that people needed to do a good job of their requirements.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's requirements are such an interesting part of developing a product, because they're very unclear often at the beginning, and in many projects they remain unclear, and we're exploring all the way through the development cycle. But it's really in requirements, it's very rich and intense about relationships. It's the time in the development cycle when all the stakeholder needs have to come together, and they have to synergistically figure out what is it that they're going to build. And it's never something that's predetermined. So you have to have, this diversity of humans coming together with different backgrounds and different roles. And they're only going to succeed if they collaborate, not just cooperate, where they have rules of engagement and all that, but it's really collaboration that's needed.
Yeah, that's a great distinction. There's a big difference between merely cooperating and collaborating. So let me ask you this. You've now been helping people collaborate on requirements for quite some time. What have you found to be most surprising, in that process while helping people collaborate?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, what's amazing to me, having come from a technical background, is how business folks, become experts in requirements modeling when they're involved in workshops. And that, we may provide, as the technical folks and BAs and facilitators, we may provide a framework for them to communicate their needs through the models and using multiple interconnected models, but they have the content. And once they become familiar with the frameworks that we provide them, whether it's, scenarios, use cases, rules, data models, states, whatever combination of models that they'll build in workshops, they become experts in the models. I had one situation that comes to mind where I was in a workshop and I was standing at a flip chart, and we were doing state modeling. This was around claims, disability income claims. And we had gone through several iterations of the state diagrams, and we were using events and states to elicit business rules, very atomic rules. And at one point, I was asking a question and starting to draw the state, the next modification of the state diagram. And the business person was getting impatient with me because I wasn't quite getting what she was saying. And she jumped up and grabbed the marker from my hand and pushed me out of the way and started doing the state modeling on the flip chart. And it was awesome. It was fabulous.
So right. What a better way to do a state model than to let the expert on the content build it herself.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we just provide a little bit of guidance and tools to help get people there. So that's one thing that's really amazing. The other thing that I think is really important for those of us in the role of business analyst to do, and this surprises me in a pleasant way over and over again, is be neutral. I mean, we really need to provide a framework, do the design, and provide a framework for helping people collaborate, figure out which models are going to help best communicate and express the domain, and, you know, help bring decision rules and ways to reach closure to groups, all that good stuff. But we really have to stay neutral so that we can be mindful of the process and that we can really listen for the various interests and move people away from positions and towards interests and ourselves be open to outcome. And then the community, the project community, sort of starts to model that same thing. So another thing that surprises me in a pleasant way over and over again is that there's a tremendous degree of freedom with neutrality.
So we've talked some about the kind of the positive aspects of what you've seen in the requirements workshops. So tell me some about some of the challenges that you've faced in doing these type things.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, of course, conflict and disagreement is always one of the biggest challenges that we have. And of course, if you are doing this role and facilitating workshops from within an organization and you're inside the organization, that puts you in a difficult position to get in the middle of conflict if you're part of the project community. So one thing I recommend that the facilitators, BAs do is have a buddy, somebody that is in another area that can help work through the conflict situation. But one of the things that the community needs to do is overcome these conflict, and this is where the issue of trust and building trust becomes really, really important. So when there's no trust, that's when conflict starts to emerge. And I always have to remind myself when there's conflict and disagreement and voices get raised and people seem to sit back and take positions rather than focus on their interests or not share those things that we generally call hidden agendas in an open way, we really have to recognize that that conflict is actually energy. It's maybe negative energy, but it's very important in a facilitation role to work with that energy and name the problem and help the group decide how to deal with these conflicts.
Right. So I want to come back to the topic of trust and collaboration for a minute, but you just used the word decide. And I know as you're going through these workshops and you're dealing with conflict, you guys are having to deal a lot with this idea of decision making. You know, how do you get to a decision through all that conflict? And you emphasize that a lot in the book Requirements by Collaboration. Can you talk to me a little bit about how that factors in?
Yeah, definitely. You know, requirements work is really about a series of decisions being made over and over again. What really are the requirements? What are we going to implement when? How will it be implemented? There's countless decisions that are going to be made. And most project communities, most organizations, frankly, don't explicitly decide how to decide and know when they've made a decision explicitly. So knowing how are we going to reach closure is something that we need to bring to project communities and clarify. So we know, okay, yep, we figured out this is what the scope of the first release is really going to be, or this is the customer community that we're going to solve, or these are how we're going to enforce or implement the rules, and these are what the rules are, and all those many, many decisions. So one of the things that I have found over the years is that we need to make explicit around requirements. What are the decisions that have to be made specifically? And we have to determine what are the criteria by which we'll make a good decision, a smart decision, and what are our rules for reaching closure? I mean, how do we decide how to decide? And
right.
You're right. I mean, I wrote about that in the book and also have written an article about that's called Decide How to Decide. And when we make this explicit, it really is transformative for groups.
Right.
It helps them figure out what really is important and how are we going to know that we're done deciding.
Right. Now I'd really like to come back to this idea of trust and collaboration, because when you're making decisions and you're dealing with conflict, clearly the idea of trust in the group has to be a key part of being able to get to a decision. So let's talk a little more about how trust really factors in.
Yeah, that's a great point, Keith, because trust is really a requirement, an ingredient for successful collaboration. And this whole idea of decision making is one way to build trust. And essentially, I like the model of thinking of trust as being three types of trust. One being contractual trust, one being communication trust, and one being competency trust. Okay, so if we sort of unpack this idea of trust and how it relates to collaboration, in contractual trust, everybody knows clearly what their roles and responsibilities are. And together, you know, as a team, we have mutual interests. We know, here's the thing that's really important when it comes to requirements. When things change, which they definitely will, we have a way to renegotiate and understand what is important, how to deal with those changes. So all that's part of contractual trust. In communication trust, this means that trust is transparent. It's open. It's honest. Everybody, you know, tells the truth, and frequent communication is used. And then that third type is competency trust. And this is where, you know, we can respect one another's abilities and skills, and we recognize, you know what, I can't succeed without you, and I trust in your competency. And the other piece, of course, is that we have to learn from each other to become better and better and more competent. So these three types of trust really get built as well as sustained when project communities collaborate, in particular early on around requirements.
So what are some of the practical or collaborative practices that we can put into place to help build those kinds of trusts?
Right, that's an important question. Let's talk about the issue of decisions, which we were mentioning earlier. If we know what the decisions are, and if we know how to decide how to decide, and we're clear on the prioritization techniques or criteria that will make smart choices, and who, in the end, if it's a single person, will, after participatory exploration, who will make that decision,
right.
That serves contractual trust. That's one example in contractual trust. If we have protocols for how we'll exchange information, how we'll deal with changing requirements, that's also serving contractual trust. When we think about communication trust in a workshop, one of the things that we have to be very clear on are what we mean by things, those nouns, those terms of the domain, which should be delineated in some kind of glossary or data dictionary. So defining those key terms that we always stumble over around requirements,
mm-hmm.
These things are so foundational to requirements. This builds communication competency. It's a very simple thing, but at least we know what we mean by things, so those semantics have to be clearly defined. When we build a prototype right after coming out of a requirements workshop and show it to the customers and get feedback immediately, we're building competency in communication, which builds trust. When the facilitator plans, if we're going to use a more formal workshop, and plans and designs the agenda with clear expectations for what the products or deliverables are going to be, make sure that all the stakeholders are there, has a flow and agenda that's going to weave together the requirements, deliverables in an effective manner, that builds communication trust in the community. And in terms of competency trust, when we use multiple models to represent requirements and engage our customers, the business folks, to provide the content for those models, we're all gaining in competency. When we ask our customers perhaps to do some pre-work to mentally engage prior to coming together in a room and for a collaborative event, they're building some competency. And when we get feedback in a meaningful way on both our process, how we collaborate, and our products, you know, was this good enough? Have we documented just enough? Have we over-documented? Do we need to do more testing of our requirements? And we get feedback through retrospectives. This is a really, really powerful way to build competency trust. So those are some specific ways that there's this tight interconnection between trust and collaboration.
Right. Yeah, those are all fantastic examples. I want to throw maybe a little bit of a twist in there, or a little bit of a question to you, though. We have, you know, a growing question amongst the BA community today about how the Agile movement is affecting the role of the business analyst. So I'm curious, from a collaboration and a workshop standpoint, how do you see that interacting with this whole Agile movement? Does it alter things? Does it change something? What happens there?
Well, it makes our job even more important than other, and it makes the idea of collaboration totally central to Agile. In fact, it provides a lot of promise. I mean, the stuff around doing collaboration, which for me personally I've been doing for many, many years, when Agile started growing into popularity and now really is moving into mainstream, this was really thrilling for me, because all the talk about a project community coming together and collaborating around requirements and using a time box and doing feedback, all this stuff is things that are very part and parcel to doing requirements workshops and chartering workshops and retrospectives. So what we see with Agile, if you really look around and the companies that I've worked with and others in the Agile community have worked with that are successful with Agile, they've really got this collaboration thing down really, really well. Not that you come out of the gate having it worked out. That's what the feedback loops and the retrospectives and the time boxing is all about. So what the BA community needs to do is have a greater appreciation of how much promise and power this collaboration stuff gives us, and how we're going to be able to better serve our customer around real needs by using some of the structures and disciplines in Agile. So it's not that analysis goes away. You know, I think, Keith, that there's a lot of misconception.
Right.
People think, oh, you're doing Agile, you're just like hacking away.
Right. Yeah. Who needs the analyst?
Yeah. That's a big misconception. In some ways, the analysis work is even more complex, because you, as an analyst, are not just working on a current iteration or sprint, depending if you're using the Scrum method, and supporting the testing and development and the product owner in the current iteration, but you've got to work ahead an iteration, and basically you're working ahead for an entire release. So I see with Agile that in terms of collaborative workshops and using workshops as a way to help facilitate the Agile approach, you basically can have and should have, eventually, as you start to get rhythm with Agile, three interwoven workshops that you're using. And you begin really at an iteration level where you're doing your iteration planning, which requires you, of course, to have your requirements as a starting point in your backlog. So an analyst may run a workshop where you build the backlog to begin with, or at least clean up what is believed to be in the backlog, then facilitate perhaps with the project manager, or certainly be part of the planning workshop. So you have an iteration workshop to determine what you're going to build for that iteration, what's done enough, what really are the requirements, and often you need to go beyond just mere stories to articulate those requirements. So you have an iteration workshop, but those iterations deliver a bit of functionality that need to be woven together and knitted together into a release that is going to be sent or implemented or deployed either internally or externally, depending on the product that you're building. So there's release workshops. And to do a release workshop, you really have to have a look ahead of where do you want to go with the product for that release. The release might be 6 months, 4 months, or 3 months, whereas your iteration is 2 to 4 weeks, okay?
Right.
So you have release workshops, and again, that has to be built on an understanding of the requirements. And then you need to also have, and this might be done earlier in the process, but you need to have a roadmap for the product as a whole. And a roadmapping workshop pulls together the entire community around the product as a whole and what we're going to deliver over time, again, based on a look ahead with the requirements. So this means that the analyst has to have a view of both the large and the small, an ability to operate in the current as well as in the future. So it offers many opportunities and challenges in a positive way for business analysts.
Well, Ellen, I think that's great insight for the BAs that are looking down the road and seeing Agile in their future. You know, we've had a little bit of an Agile theme on the show for the past couple of episodes with Alistair Coburn and the folks out at Version 1. And most certainly, in what you're saying as well, the theme that comes to the top in all of those episodes is that the analyst role is becoming even more central, more critical. This whole idea of quickly, iteratively, visually collaborating on things is a growing need, not diminishing with Agile.